Hello and welcome to the Tuesday, February 10th, 2015 edition of the Sands and its Stumps and its Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Got a couple different stories today about business continuity and disaster recovery. First one here from Chris about good old CryptoLocker, the various versions of ransomware that is encrypting your hard drive are causing quite a bit of havoc with, in particular, small businesses. And one thing Chris ran into is their business actually did have backups of documents and such, but not of important software, in particular, accounting software that wasn't easy to come by because it was an older type of software they were using. Probably good that they upgraded, but you probably don't want to upgrade just because you just lost all of your data. Now, in this case, it went pretty easy, but they still ended up having to buy a bunch new computers and software in order to stay in business. Next, let's move from home users and small businesses to sort of the opposite, the British air traffic control. On December 12th, both system flight servers, which provide these controllers with data, went down at the same time. And this is an interesting example of how sometimes redundancy doesn't solve the problem. In this case, each air traffic controller is assigned a unique number that essentially identifies what sector they're responsible for and what function they have for the sector. And they call this atomic function, this number. The mainframe should be capable of dealing with 193 of these atomic functions, and that's sufficient given the number of sectors they have the airspace split up into and the number of different controllers and such they have managing it. Now, in November, they added additional sectors, and even that would not hit this number of 193. However, in one part of the code, actually, they limited this number to 151, not 193. So on December 12th, 153 of these atomic functions were reached, and as a result, the first mainframe went into failsafe. In this case, you rather shut down the system than provide air traffic controllers with bad data. And this is essentially what happened. Next step, well, the system failed over. It failed over to the secondary system, which of course contained the same code, and with that it also failed. The important lesson here is that redundancy is not the only thing you need. You also need diversity. To go back to backups, for example, it's nice to have, for example, RAID 5 or database replication, or even have like an offline disk. But in addition, you probably still want to have another media or another location that has the same data in order to, for example, prevent a firmware issue with a particular hard drive manufacturer or such from wiping out all of your data at the same time. And Apple again went ahead and disabled all old flash versions, which are all versions that came out before last week. So if you're getting a respective note when you're browsing a website, time to update flash. Apple did this in light of seeing these 0 days being deployed against the older versions and to force users to update to the most recent version of Flash. And just as a reminder, the most recent version of Flash is 16.0.0.3.0.5. And if you're interested in reversing bias in firmware images, there's an interesting blog post by Bernardo Rodriguez at the WoodSec blog that goes into quite a bit of details as to what tools he uses to do just that, for example, to discover backdoors, to discover Trojans and such inside firmware images. Pretty interesting, in particular, if you're sort of analyzing devices and such that often only come with sort of pre-compiled, pre-assembled firmware images and not necessarily with individual files or so that are easily accessible by logging into the system. And Netflix announced that they will make more of their internal security tools available for free as open source. The latest one that they're calling their Dirty Laundry project or initiative, which essentially goes through software that Netflix uses, developed in-house or also external software, and also enumerates things like dependencies. So for example, libraries that certain software depends on, and then automates, for example, the search for vulnerabilities using open source information, like for example full disclosure or other mailing lists, to essentially give Netflix a heads up and make it easier for them to enumerate what's exactly vulnerable, what's exposed, and what needs to be patched. I will be linking to the ShmooCon talk that was given by two Netflix developers about these tools. It's a little bit too much to really adequately explain what these tools do here in this podcast. Well, and this is it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.